Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And for the moment, I am in the studio with Stephen Thompson. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Well, Stephen, today's episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour has one very important quality.
One key exclusion.
Which is that you are not on it.
You can actually, in this episode, hear my face pressed against the glass.
That's right. Because this is a very special episode. This is the one where we talk romance novels. And you should know that this is a summer when NPR is paying some special attention to the romance genre. There is going to be an opportunity to participate in a poll about romances. And we will have a link on our Facebook page and on Twitter at NPR PCHH to let you know where you can participate in that poll. That's going to be coming up as you hear this. That's going to be coming up next week. And then you're going to hear a bunch of great stuff over the course of the summer from NPR about romance. So I can't wait. And this is a great episode. We're excited about it. We're excited for you to hear it. And we will be right back.
Be honest. Are you a music nerd or a fledgling music nerd who wishes they knew more about what's out there? The All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music is here to help. All Songs Considered is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Each week, Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best new and upcoming music and lots of songs you'll fall in love with. Find new All Songs episodes every Tuesday at npr.org/podcasts or on the NPR One app.
Well, this week's show is all about romance and love. Before we get started here in Historic Studio 44, I'm going to introduce you to the special panel that we have empaneled for today's presentation. Out in LA, we have our pal Barry Hardiman. Hi, Barry Hardiman.
Hi.
What do you do at NPR?
I'm an editor at Weekend Edition.
And here in the studio with me, we have our friend Petra Mayer. Petra, what do you do at NPR?
I'm an editor with NPR Books.
And specially shipped in for this event, we have Sarah Wendell. Sarah is the proprietress, who we have talked about sometimes on this show, of the website Smart Bitches Trashy Books. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Sarah's here in D.C. for a couple of romance-related events, and we could not let her get away without bringing her in. Now, Sarah, how long have you been running Smart Bitches Trashy Books?
10 years, this past January 30th.
10 years.
I know, it's like Mesozoic era on the internet 10 years ago.
It's true.
There was Lycos and GeoCities and all kinds of magical things.
It's true, journal. Dinosaur bones. If you dig around, you find dinosaur bones and the original layout of Smart Bitches Trashy Books.
Oh, yes.
What do you do at the site now? What does the site content consist of now for those who aren't familiar?
We are all about romance novels. I like to say that the mission of the site is to connect romance readers with each other and connect them with the books that they want to read.
That seems like a valid mission.
It's a totally huge goal, and we have a lot of ways to do it. But we're all about romance novels and the women who read them and write them.
Wow. So one thing that we were going to talk about, when you talk about the world of romance novels, we were going to talk a little bit about types of books. Because if you're not familiar with the romance novel super universe, it is divided into a lot of sub-universes and then sub-sub-universes and some really specific stuff. Really specific.
Especially if you like dinosaurs.
It's true. We got there's dinosaur, but now this is one that I wanted to point out. I will confess my own predilection is for, and I've said this on the show before, for kind of breezy contemporary romances. I don't read historicals. I don't read anything with witches or werewolves or whatever. Sarah, am I lying when I say it feels like there's an awful lot of, like, vampire and shapeshifter, and I feel like this has grown in prominence, perhaps post-Twilight, or perhaps I'm just more aware of it than I used to be?
I think it's more that you're more aware of it because that genre's sales have started to decline sharply. A few years ago when you would go to the Romantic Times Book Lovers Convention, which is sort of the romance readers fan convention, I call it our Dragon Con or our Comic Con, although
sure,
not quite as big as Comic Con. And certainly no networks are sending millions of dollars worth of people to come to RT to talk
right
about a TV show.
Not yet.
Not yet. But when you go to RT, a few years ago you would see a ton of paranormal, and now it's more contemporary and historical. So the genres, they shift in popularity. There's more awareness of the paranormal because I think it has spread out into television and it has spread out into movies that are more paranormal ridiculousness,
right,
which is great. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way.
But paranormal, like Vampire Diaries is cannibalizing vampire romance.
I think it's just part of the normal spread. And you'll see that in Grimm, which is super
sure
creepy and paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
You see that sort of, I don't want to use the word spread again. You see that? You see this increase?
We're getting started quickly.
Yeah, I need to find a euphemism, and I'm not finding one. And it's
or we just need to start a drinking game for this episode.
Yes,
I love it.
Yeah. Let me ask Barry, when you do read romance, what kind of romance do you read?
So I'm a historicals lady. I really want a duke. I don't care, you know, how historically accurate it is, as long as, you know, there's like a duke in a bodice and like satin stays.
Wait, he's wearing the bodice?
Well, maybe.
A duke. Because there is one of those. There is a cross-dressing duke I can recommend to you, but I'm sorry.
Also, you know what? If there is a duke, it's not going to be that historically accurate, because aren't there like only 11 dukes in the entire English period?
You
will
find out later.
But there are about 45 of them in romance novels.
True. But I also really, you know, I got started on this, which, and I don't even know if you would place her in this genre, is the sort of the Judith Krantz.
Right. She's the gateway drug for a lot of people.
Totally. So, you know, that kind of like fairly explicit. It's let's see, it's definitely placed in a time period that's like the 80s of, you know,
it's
where
so
there's
80s.
A lot of
hair
material
and
involved. And, you know, there's like 80s. Awesome lesbian sex scenes. And, you know, people are named like Topsy. And, you know, they have these amazing. This is a true story. I love Princess Daisy so much.
Historicals and
Topsy.
Historicals and 80s.
Love
unless
that.
It's Outlander. I mean, you know. It's
right. No, sure.
There's always an exception. Yeah. But
sure.
You know.
Sure. All right, Miss Petra, how about you?
Oh, well, I am like Barry, a historicals girl. I love the Regency or the Victorian era or fake Elizabethan or fake medieval.
All right, so tell
you mean
me.
Like medievals where they bathe all the time?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's always a scene. There's always like.
There's always water.
A sexy bath. And you look at that and you think, what? How many servants had to carry that up? Like, my
there is a wonderful Scottish historical series by Maya Banks, and I read one and there was a bath in every chapter. Yeah. And I was like, these are the cleanest Scots
in
people.
Fact,
this is Clan MacLean. I love these guys.
I read one, in fact, where the heroine. People thought she was a witch because she insisted on bathing all the time.
Well, that might have been Knight in Shining Armor by Jude Devereaux, because she paid a kid to turn on the shower.
No, it wasn't Jude Devereaux. It was one, I don't know, it was one that's sort of faintly supernatural involving a curse and a woman
course.
Who could never be touched or
as
else death would come.
Okay, but I bet she got touched.
Yeah.
So, Petra.
By water.
I want to ask you, you talk generally about reading sci-fi and fantasy and stuff like that. Does that cross over with your taste in romance or no?
Peculiarly, no, because I have found very few things that hit both genres in a way that appeals to me. And I was actually going to ask Sarah if she had any advice. The one series I have found is a sort of lesser known series by Lois McMaster Bujold called The Sharing Knife, which is a
I
sort
love
of
those books.
Yeah, aren't they very sweet?
They're
sort
wonderful.
Of fantasy romance crossover. Well, and of course my very favorite romance of all time, Warrior's Woman by Joanna Lindsay, is technically sci-fi for certain values of sci-fi. But it's I don't know. Do you have any recommendations for me?
So you like fantasy romance, not science fiction romance?
Oh, could be either. As long as the world is reasonably well executed.
So one series that you might like is by an author named Kathy Pegau, and that's P-E-G-A-U. She writes for Carina Press, and she has a series that's set in space, but one is called Deep Deception, one is called Caught in Amber. Caught in Amber deals with a heroine who's addicted to a particular drug that's called Amber, and she goes through rehabilitation, but it's in space, so it's a totally different thing.
There's rehabilitation in space.
Know,
that's right.
See. We're talking about fantasy romance crossovers. I cannot pass up this opportunity to mention one of my favorite series of all time, although I'm unembarrassed about my romance habit. I am embarrassed about this. Anne Bishop's Black Jewels.
Oh, no shame there.
Oh, come on.
Oh, mercy.
Tell me what this is.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So I actually wrote a piece about this for NPR. It's a series where, she has kind of an interesting project, right? The idea of this series, and it is hoot fantasy. Everybody has A-E in their names. You know that's how it's
right,
fantasy,
sure,
right?
Sure. They're
fae. Yeah, sure. The heroine is Janelle.
Sure.
So it's set in this universe where there's three different layers of world, from the normal world down to hell. And the fantasy tropes of light and dark are flipped, right? Power comes from the darkness. Women rule. The witches.
Yeah.
The magic users are ranked by their jewels, and the darker jewels, the black jewels, are the ones that rule. But it's just so incredibly, it's like a 15-year-old's fantasy of emotional fulfillment. Like, the men are incredibly hot and incredibly emotionally protective and incredibly,
right,
like,
sure.
They go mad. I mean, one character spends most of one book completely insane because he thinks he's hurt the woman he loves.
And this is one thing that I also want to ask Sarah is, how do you find books to read that don't, I mean, you know all these tropes, right? You actually have a book which, among other things, talks about a lot of romance tropes. Your book is called
Beyond Heaving Bosoms.
This is Beyond Heaving Bosoms I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Has kind of a catalog of romance tropes.
Yes.
And for me, there are times when the stuff that Petra is talking about, the kind of emotionally inaccessible dude and all that stuff, big shoulders,
moody loner, dude.
Closed doors. Yes. You know what I mean? Mm. That becomes, there are times when I feel like I've had enough of that. Mm-hmm. How do you find books that have different types of, particularly guys in them?
Men, yeah.
If you are looking for man, woman stories, and you're looking for ones with a different kind of dude.
Well, one of the things that helps when you have this awesome thing called the internet is that you get a bunch of romance readers together and we all start talking about what we like. And if there isn't a name for that, we give it a name. And if there is a name that works, then we all teach each other how to refer to it. So now not only do we have a connection to other readers, when truthfully most romance readers who are my age grew up very isolated, not telling anyone that they loved romance because they were more often than not going to be met with ridicule. And there are still readers who sign on to the internet, and I still receive email at least once a month from someone that says, oh my gosh, where have you been? I had no idea you were all here. Mm-hmm. And look, there you are. This is great. Oh my gosh, I'll be back in 10 years after I've read everything and bought all these books.
Right.
The thing that happens is once we start talking about the things that we love, just like any other sort of niche, is that we develop a vocabulary. So I think what you're describing is instead of moody loner alpha grumpy dude who would prefer a 20-foot barrier between himself and his emotions, you're probably talking more about a beta hero. Not beta in the sense of less than an alpha,
right,
but beta as in different. He is emotionally connected. Mm-hmm. He is nurturing. He's kind. He's not only familiar with his emotions, but not completely freaked out by having them,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
is more emotionally fluent than heroes that you may be used to reading in,
right,
you know, the dark, moody, broody.
Give me
isolated.
Some examples.
Beta heroes. Courtney Milan writes
a
lot.
Oh, I love Courtney.
Isn't she wonderful?
Totally. I love
Courtney Milan writes really good beta heroes. Tessa Dare.
Great historicals.
Tessa Dare writes great beta hero historicals. The first Nora Roberts of the
this
Bridal
is exactly
Quartet.
What I was about to say.
Yes, mm-hmm. Carter in Vision in White is very much a beta hero.
This is a series that Sarah and I were talking about a little bit earlier, which is why I just was sort of saying, yes, exactly. This is a Nora Roberts contemporary series, as Sarah said, the Bridal Quartet. And Sarah has written about this guy.
Yes, Carter. I like him.
He is
a lot.
He is a kind of like a nerdy. He's not.
He's a professor.
Yeah.
And he really likes this girl, and he knows that he's kind of nerdy and doesn't quite know what to do. And he has a colleague that he keeps asking for advice, and the advice is terrible, which makes it awesomely hysterical to read about. He genuinely wants to get to know this girl, and he has the very best of intentions, and he's really interested in her and doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And there's an earnest sort of honesty about that, mm-hmm, that is really lovely to read.
I liked that book.
I liked the book a lot. Carter's one of my favorite heroes.
Again, Vision in White, it's called.
Yes.
I liked that book. One of the other things that we had touched on when you and I were talking earlier is the kind of romance genre and romance industry, because how much money are we talking about?
The figures vary, but most commonly I see reported $1 billion a year annually in the U.S.
Right. So this is money. Big money business. And like most big money businesses in culture, they deal with kind of trying to reach new audiences, and they deal with trying to diversify both the readers and undoubtedly the creators and the characters who are in the books. Can you talk a little bit about how those efforts go and where to find those books if you're not necessarily looking for what I think is most common, which is two straight white people in a city or small town?
A small town with an adorable name.
Right.
And children who always behave and
right,
dogs who are instantly housebroken.
Correct.
Welcome to my world.
Exactly.
There are a lot of options. If you would like to read stories about two men, there is an entire genre waiting for you. Stories about two women are becoming more and more popular. Kathy Pagel wrote one. It's wonderful. I think it's called Deep Deception, although I might be mixing my titles. In terms of finding books featuring more diverse characters, and I know you've talked about how the word diverse begins to mean very little, one of the interesting things that I have seen over the past year is the fact that more readers are talking to each other and more authors are talking to each other and more readers and authors are interacting. And so when readers say, I would really like to read about characters with my experience, who look like me, who have my background, who understand my cultural experience, there are authors who are saying, I wrote that. I can do that. It is easier to sell, I believe, the book that is the most common and the most understood and the most easy to recognize. So, for example, Christmas Romance, always a big seller.
Yeah.
Easy to sell.
I've read a lot of Christmas romances.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not going to lie.
But there are other, I don't know if you know this, but like not everyone in the world is Christian.
Well, so, hello. Let's go to temple.
I know. So when you say, okay, well, for example, I self-published a Hanukkah novella this
yes,
year.
You did.
Because I have this rule where if I complain twice about something, I have to do something about it or stop complaining. Those are my options. When you start to write an experience that is different than what most people have come across in romance, there's an extra effort, I think, to reach those people who, you know, there's an audience for that, right? You know that there's an audience for that story. You have to go and find those readers yourself in a lot of ways. So one of the things that I've noticed this year is a writer named Kawana Bradley frequently tweets, "We need diverse romance." And so if you follow that hashtag, you are going to see a lot of people talking about Indian American romances. There are authors like Alisha Rai and Salika Snyder and Sonali Dev, A Bollywood Affair, is one of the best books I read last year. It's glorious.
That was one of our concierge picks, actually.
It's wonderful. And she has the sequel coming out, and the cover is beautiful.
I need to read it. It looked really
good. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And you have characters that are African American. So Beverly Jenkins writes wonderful Black American historicals. And her most recent trilogy was set in pre-statehood California, and it was fascinating.
What's that called?
The Destiny series. Destiny's Embrace, Destiny's Captive, and Destiny, the third one where the heroine is a pirate.
Ooh. Sorry, I'm about that.
Destiny, the heroine is a pirate.
That's a subgenre of historical.
If you Google that, I'm sure it'll come up because she's a pirate. And then there's a wonderful selection of authors like Kawana Bradley and Rochelle Ehlers. I think it's Ehlers. Who are writing experiences of Black women, and you get to see those romances receiving a wider audience because of this connection between readers and authors. When the readers say, "I really want to read that," there is someone who can say, "I really want to write that. Here you go."
Yeah. It was interesting that you mentioned the Hanukkah novella, because when I read the Hanukkah novella, one of the things I thought was so interesting about it was, I'm not just saying this to kiss up to Sarah because she's here, but it's a really charming romantic book, but it also takes place at this Hanukkah camp, well, Jewish camp in the winter at Hanukkah. And there are a lot of opportunities for the characters to sort of talk about, you know, various traditions and why we do this. And, you know, there is something to be said for specifically trying to read about different kinds of stuff than maybe the exact traditions that your own family, in my case, celebrates at Christmas. You know,
please, especially tell me, please tell me it's called Eight Sexy Nights.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. Barry, get out of my head.
I have named the sequel. Thank
so
you
nice
very much.
Here. Eight Hot Sexy Nights. It's called Lighting the Flames. I'm sorry.
Okay,
it's
not that's, Eight that's, Sexy that's good
pretty
too,
good. That's all right. I like a lit flame.
I will write that for you.
I'm so excited.
Oy vey.
Oh my God, the subgenre of klezmer and romance.
Klezmerotica.
Get out of my head, Barry.
Klezmerotica.
Again with the get out of my head.
So here's what I want to point out. We're all having a good time here. I don't know if you can tell. This is one of the things that I love about genre. And this is one of the things that, one of the reasons why I wanted to kind of do a deep dive into a particular genre on a particular episode is that when you are deep inside a genre that people love, you get at these really intense, and we could have done a similar thing about comics. We could do a similar thing about sci-fi. We could do a similar thing about lots of different stuff.
Reality TV.
Reality TV. That'd be me.
Yeah.
And also, I just want to make sure everyone knows that I recommended a book series to Linda that is by Jessica Clare, set in reality television programs.
That's true. Yeah. That's how specialized Sarah is. All right. So here's another thing that I want to ask. Barry.
Yeah.
What do you not like in romance, in reading romance?
What do I not like? I mean, my main thing is that I want plot and I want romance. But the balance of the two, some romance novels, I don't know if you guys have found, I'm sure you've found this, the thing where the plot becomes so heavy that you miss the central love story.
Yep.
And that, for me, is a no-go. I really want the central kissy face to be, like, the thing in the story
stakes.
That is, like, leading me along.
Yeah.
Even if there's, like, you know, a vial of this and a whatever and a secrets, you know, there's always secrets, you know. But I don't need the secrets can't overpower what is the central love story for me. Because otherwise it just doesn't, like, I really need to be invested in in those characters. And so for me, it's that. And then I also have to say, because I'm a person who does historicals, like I said, I don't need the research to be perfect, but like I can't have a Viscount that's like, you know, arriving in a Lamborghini or whatever.
Which is hilarious because I frequently say, I don't care if the Duke drives a Porsche to Almack. Doesn't care. Doesn't bother me at all. You just drive up in a brick yellow Porsche and get out and be like, hey, y'all,
as long as he
out?
Has a voucher,
hey,
otherwise Lady Jersey up? Won't let him
that's
in.
That's right.
Here are my black jewels. Yeah,
that's
no,
right.
I agree. Yeah. I, but for me, that's like I do love like Petra, I love Regency. I really love Tudor, fake Tudor. Mm-hmm. I want it to be enough that I can be in that world, which is what I feel about sci-fi and also fantasy. So that's a thing that carries throughout literature for me.
Am I allowed to make recommendations for Barry?
Of course.
Oh my God. Okay. I
so
hope
what
so.
You like
God,
is
the Amazon bill. I can't even.
Some of these are on sale, so don't worry. Okay. So what you like is character-driven romance, not plot-driven romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the same way. I don't care if you've got like 9 MacGuffins and everyone has a gun and you need to go stop and have sex in the stairwell. I don't care. Just stop that. But the internal conflict makes me super happy. So one writer that you would really, really like is Teresa Romaine, like the lettuce. She writes 2 series. One is for Source Books and one is for Kensington. The Kensington books have come out once a year at Christmas and they're all season 4 something. Season 4 Surrender was my favorite because it's a scandalous, I believe that he is an earl. I might be getting his title wrong. He has a scandalous house party every holiday season. And he has a bet with a friend that he has to get not only the most virtuous of spinsters to come to the house party, but she has to stay for the whole 2 weeks. And so there's all of this.
Les liaisons dangereuses.
And she, meanwhile, has decided, all right, if I'm going to have to be a wallflower, I'm going to have 1 wild week. So heck yes, crazy house party, let's do this. And then they both find out that they both love books and the best scenes of the book are in the library. And it is a gloriously wonderful book. And you would love it. Oh, it's wonderful.
Yes.
And you would also like Kate Noble, who writes really thoughtful historicals. But you might know Kate Noble also wrote the Lizzie Bennett Diaries.
That's why I know Kate Noble.
Writes. She was an executive writer or an executive producer. I hope I didn't get her title wrong, for The Librarians on TNT.
Oh,
so she has the fantasy.
I was going to say, I knew who that was, and I couldn't place it.
But she writes wonderful historicals that do that same thing, where you have 2 characters who have a very large amount of layered and difficult internal conflict to get
that's
out of
I
the
want.
Way before they can get together.
Yes.
And then by the time they kiss, you're like, oh, thank God.
Oh, my God. This is the best game ever.
I know, right? It's amazing. And here's the thing. Sarah talked about the waiting around for them to kiss, which I think is a good transition into one of the things that you unavoidably have to talk about when you talk about romance novels, which is the varying degrees of explicitness in the way that they handle the kissing and the rest.
Yes.
And I think without asking anybody to say what their taste is in level of explicitness, I did want to mention just that I think it's interesting. When you get to know a writer, this is one of the things that you get to know about them, is exactly how much of the sex scene they will write.
Totally true.
Some of them know you're going to get very explicit right up until the very end. Some of them...
And then there's a wave.
Exactly.
Right. Or somebody shatters.
Exactly.
And you're done. And you're done.
Exactly. But some of them, you know you're going to sort of get the and then later version of...
Closed door.
Exactly, the closed door.
And Kristen Higgins is great for that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's one of the people I was going to say is that... Kristen Higgins is a romance writer that I like a ton. She writes, to me, really good kind of getting to know you banter scenes. She writes people I tend to like. There's always a dog. Always a dog. And
Harlequin has casting calls for the dogs on the cover.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
I got one. It was adorable. We're looking for this breed about this size.
That's
we
awesome.
Need these commands to be obeyed. We're looking. And
that's
I was
a
just
great
like,
story.
I want my dog to be eligible.
And one of the things that I told Sarah that I thought was so interesting is that a while ago on the show, I recommended these books by Penny Reed, which have kind of a very quirky, weird feel to them that I really enjoy. And I read a book of hers, and I think I got it on my Kindle. So I think it was an ebook where this might be more likely to appear. But she had essentially written, we are at the point of the book where you can see where this is going. You can either read, first there is what Sarah was calling a closed door. And in fact, that's what it says. First, there's a closed door version of this scene. And then there's an open door version of this scene. And it's kind of like choose your own sex level, which I thought was a super interesting idea. Because, I mean, not everybody is a big sex scene
I'm imagining
reader.
It like a little advent calendar with a window that you can open if you want to, like, or just close
sort
it
of.
And read on.
I mean, that is sort of what it is, because Barry and I are both people who read Judith Kranz and stuff like that. Yes. And Jackie Collins.
Oh,
and
my
all that
God,
stuff.
Yes. Clan of the Cave Bear.
Hell
yes.
to the yeah. Oh, how everybody yeah. discovered Mercy. Sex in seventh grade.
Yes. Well, yeah. exactly.
That's
so it's
a thing that people do.
But it's yeah. interesting, though,
first
isn't
rights.
It?
For,
yes.
I think
for
years.
All right. All right, yep. Pervs. It's interesting to me that a lot of people discover, kind of in early romance, they discover the concept of reading sex scenes. Mm-hmm. But then later in life, you sort of get to a point where it's like, unless it's really interesting, I don't necessarily need to read another one. That's sort of how I feel now.
It's totally true. I honestly sometimes skip the sex scenes. I'm more interested in this, if it's really well done, I'm more interested in the sparking between the people. You know, there are some writers that I'll read the sex scenes, but for the most part, I'm glad to know that somebody else does that because I was kind of feeling like a cop-out for a while.
Well, there's a lot of authors that I've spoken to who have said, okay, you know what? There's only a certain number of ways you can describe that, and we're going to start recycling terms because you have a choice. Either you get extremely technical, which, no, or you go back to the very florid, purple, turgid, mysterious grotto and a dragon. And what the heck did I just read?
Right. Yeah.
Because what happened when romance became, the genre that we recognize as romance came out of obscurity and became more well known at about the same time when women were experiencing their own liberation. And so women weren't really supposed to have openly horny pants. We weren't supposed to be openly sexually curious. And so everything about arousal was very ambiguous and clothed in the most purple and obscure of grottos and cinnabar caverns. And now you have this incredible amount of explicit erotic material. The thing that's remained constant is that the woman is the center. You are getting the female experience and the female story, which is important.
Right.
But what that also means is that as things have become more and more explicit, you have readers who are like, okay, I really don't need to read that version again. I mean, there are some writers like Julianne Long and Teresa Romaine and Lisa Kleypas who write gorgeous, gorgeous scenes like that.
Mm-hmm. They Lisa Kleypas.
Oh, she's so talented. Mm-hmm. And you get to a point in those books where you're like, I'm actually looking forward to reading what is happening next. Whereas other books, you reach a point where you're like, okay, I will open tab A and insert tab B.
Right,
and we will get the Allen wrench and install the bookcase from IKEA. And it is Herdvert, you know, inserted into her Vulgar. And
it does feel
like so sounds like an IKEA catalog.
No, it's true. It's true.
And the thing that I think is sort of interesting about it is what you're trying to do and when it is really accomplished well is you're trying to give the reader the feeling of what real chemistry is like. And everybody, I hope, has had the experience of real chemistry, the breath going out of your chest, the room going black. And done correctly, it's a real feat to do an explicit sex scene in a way that puts the reader in that place. And not in the way of like, oh, I'm reading a sex scene and it's so titillating, but like I am in this character's lungs, you know? I can feel the air going out.
It's a level of intimacy.
And, right. Yes. Laying chemistry bare, so to speak, is what it should be. And that is actually when I peel off from a sex scene, it's because I don't feel the chemistry of the characters, even though I might have felt it in their dialogue.
Right. And choreography is not the same thing as intimacy.
Exactly.
Right. Well, yeah, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to actually have a little bit of a quiz. So that'll be interesting. Sarah has brought some killer questions, and we will get to those in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Jessica Robinson, and I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Fifth generation maker of Tito's Handmade Vodka. Tito Beverage, yep, that's his real name, incorporates the concepts of artisan craftsmanship found in boutique wineries into the spirits industry to create Tito's Handmade Vodka. Tito still uses a time-honored pot still batch distillation process at the original distillery where he started it all in Austin, Texas. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from corn and is naturally gluten-free.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We've got a whole romance show going on this week, and we're having a very nice conversation. But those of you who listen to the show know that from time to time, we also incorporate a little playing of a game into the show. And because we had Sarah here, we asked Sarah if she would administer a brief quiz. So take it away, Sarah Wendell.
All right. So I have to thank Elise and Carrie and Amanda and Redheaded Girl, who all write for me at Smart Bitches, who helped me come up with the questions because we took this job very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are the quiz master. I am deeply cold in your shadow because, damn, this is hard. So first question for Linda.
Okay.
In which era is most steampunk romance set? Victorian, Regency, Edwardian, Georgian, or Woodstock?
I'm going to tell you why I know the answer to this question. I know the answer to this question because when we were at Comic-Con in the summer of 2014, and I was looking for a panel to attend, I happened to go to a panel called What is Steampunk?
Fabulous! So know it's Woodstock.
I believe it's Victorian.
You are correct.
And I know this because I watched a guy who was dressed as Steampunk Iron Man.
Who's a friend of mine.
He was
Hi, Thomas.
He was awesome. He had an incredibly awesome Steampunk Iron Man costume.
Yeah.
He led Amazing. This panel. It was really interesting. And I have just used the knowledge that I gleaned. Thank you, Comic-Con. One for
Yay.
Me. That's me getting a question right.
Yay.
Good for
wow.
me.
And if you like steampunk, I want to recommend Mel Jean Brooke.
Oh, yeah.
Who writes an incredible yeah. set of yes. steampunk series. Yeah. Especially if, Barry, you would like The Iron Duke because it's very familiar romance stories.
Mm.
Okay.
Sold.
Barry, which of the following sets of names are not found in a romance or series? Colby, Cord, Colt, Cade, and Dag. Aiden, Ranoff, Morgan, Aline, and Wolfric. 3. Ambrose, Guilford, Fitzwilliam, and Darius. Wrath, Zadist, Butch, Rage, and John Matthew. Or 5. Fitzwilliam, Charles, George, and William.
I'm going to say 4.
No, I'm sorry. 4 is
Ooh,
Wrath.
Shoot.
Wrath, Zadist, Butch, Rage, and John Matthew are from the Black Dagger Brotherhood series by J.R. Ward.
Oh, which it's just not my... I feel like I've encountered all these other Ambroses and Dariuses.
Well, Colby, Cord, Colt, Kate, Dag, and many other names beginning with C are Lorelei James' Rough Rider series. If you like erotica
okay.
and cowboys, you will like that.
I mean, you
I suspect
please.
There's an audience
please.
For that.
Somebody yeah. listening just sat yeah. up and went, yes, please, give me now.
Yes, give somebody, me Colby.
Somebody just said erotica and cowboys.
mm-hmm. Aiden, Ranuff, Morgan, Aline, and Wolfric are from Mary Bellog's Bedwin series.
Okay.
Fitzwilliam, Charles, George, and William are the first names of the
are
men
the
in
names
Pride,
of the...
and Pride mm-hmm. and Prejudice.
Yes.
And Ambrose, Guilford, Fitzwilliam, and Darius we made up.
Ah.
All right.
Darius. Really?
Yes.
Okay,
all right,
I'm dreading
Petra.
What my question's going to be. Okay.
Petra.
Okay, I'm ready.
This is funny that you're getting this question.
Uh-huh.
Dukes are very, very popular in romance.
Ooh,
very
yes,
popular.
Yes,
very,
yes.
very popular. But according mm-hmm. to Debrett's peerage, how many actual dukes are there currently in
oh
the British non-royal peerage?
I think I just said it was 11. But...
So here are your 5 choices.
Oh.
14, 24, 100 million, 79, or 164.
14, I think.
Nope, 24.
Nope. Oh.
24
oh.
dukes currently. Oh. Except
in
romance land where there are 100 million.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Here's question 2.
So ready.
Which of the following is not the name of a contemporary romance series? A. Cupcake Lovers. B. Fool's Gold. C. Animal Magnetism. D. Play by Play. Or E. Lover's Lane.
See, if it's Lover's Lane, it's some kind of joke. Like it's like they're all named like George Lane and Dave Lane and Pete Lane.
Totes.
And it's a bunch of brothers.
Yeah,
and they're all
yeah.
named
and they all work on cars.
The Lane brothers.
Yeah.
Cupcake Lovers, there are plenty of series that are bakery adjacent. I'm just not sure.
Yeah. You just named a whole new subgenre.
I would like to be bakery adjacent.
Well, no, there's one called The Bakery Sisters.
Yeah.
That's
oh, okay.
That's a Susan Mallory, I yep. think. Cupcake Lovers.
I'm sorry. That is a series by Beth Siota.
Dang it!
Fool's Gold is by Susan Mallory.
I've read those.
Animal Magnetism is by Jill Shalvis. The Play by Play series is by J.C. Burton and has the most glorious covers you have ever seen.
Oh, so close!
And Lover's Lane I made up.
Now I'm laughing at you.
So you're still in the lead.
Yeah, you're still winning.
I'm making my Stephen Thompson noise. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, God. Okay. Barry.
Yeah.
Which of the following is not a series by author Lori Wilde? A. Twilight, Texas. B. Cupid, Texas. C. Jubilee, Texas. D. Applejack, Texas. Or E. Stardust, Texas. And I would like you to know that when I was composing this last night, my 7-year-old said, no,
ponies.
It should be Cheese, Texas.
So Cheese, nice. Texas.
Wait a minute. I feel like I'm going to go with Applejack.
You are correct. That is not real.
Yay!
It's a tie.
She was my favorite pony, though.
Okay.
That's right.
Petra. Yet another contemporary romance series question.
Oh, God.
Which of the following is not the name of a contemporary romance series?
Okay.
Which of the following is not the name of a contemporary romance series? A. Cupcake Club. B. Girls Night Out. C. Shoe Shopping Sisters, D, Last Chance, or E, Virgin River?
I don't know. Shoe Shopping Sisters.
You are
kind
correct.
Whoa!
Oh, no! We're all. It's happening.
That's a
oh, I'm so glad there's going to be
this
a real.
The worst.
All right,
no,
so I have one more round and then a tiebreaker.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
Okay. Linda, when you search Amazon.com for romance, there are how many results? 1.4 million, 1.9 million, 2.2 million, or 4.4 million?
4.4.
1.4 million. As of last night, 1,406,711 came up.
Wow. Where right. are the other 3 million romance novels I want?
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. So which of the following book descriptions are not real? A, Passion and Ponies, a contemporary romance about a young man who loves My Little Pony Friendship is Magic and a woman who may unwillingly inherit her family's cupcake and sex toy business. B, Darkly Danish Style, a paranormal about a creature of the night who spends his days designing lamps and end chairs in Denmark, and the light-obsessed interior decorator who wants to hunt him down.
Are you saying only one of these is not real?
Yes.
I was going to say,
I would actually,
neither of those
that
can
does
possibly
not,
be real.
That does not sound real, but it does sound like the only romance novel my mid-century loving husband would really be into.
And this is the third that may or may not be real.
Okay.
C. Hit me. The Big Not-So-Small Curvy Girls Dating Agency, a contemporary romance about a big, not-so-small curvy girls dating agency.
I want this all to be real.
I want them all to be real, but I'm just saying, I just don't feel like the Danes, that particular Danish description sounds like a chair I want to sit in, if you know what I mean. I'm going to go with that one.
You are correct. I made that up.
Which was so brilliant, though. Oh,
we
I
broke
loved
Linda.
It.
She's like lying She's down, pissed. Having a nap.
I
She's
broke
got
her.
A fainting couch in the studio
yeah.
here.
Oh, okay. Good. We should have brought one in.
Okay, Petra.
All right. Mm.
Which dinosaur is not the hero of an erotic romance currently on sale?
Oh, I'm going to lose this. And I was just looking at that series. Damn.
All right. You ready?
I can't remember. I blanked it. I washed
this
my brain
This is where
out.
I employed my 9-year-old's knowledge of dinosaurs. Okay. I need a dinosaur I need dinosaur names.
Okay.
It's like, oh, okay, okay, Mom. All right. Which dinosaur is not the hero of an erotic romance currently on sale? A, Tyrannosaurus Rex. B, Velociraptor. C, Triceratops. D, Iguanodon. E, Brontosaurus.
I'm going to say Iguanodon. That seems like the least sexy
you
dinosaur.
You are right.
Woohoo!
Mm. All right.
2 points.
It's a tie Two between points. Petra and Barry. I am out of it. I was in an early lead, and now I'm
out. Okay.
Now I'm defeated. Now we need a tiebreaker between Petra and Barry. I'm irrelevant. It's
oh,
fine.
No!
Without you,
no.
this would not have happened.
I'm a wallflower.
Okay.
It's fine.
Barry.
Yes.
True or false? Is Falling for the Billionaire Werewolf Dinosaur a real and actual book?
I'm going to say true.
True. This is true. Falling yep. for the Billionaire Dinosaur.
Oh, God, it's all down to me.
Werewolf Dinosaur.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm going to say true. Because if there's a billionaire involved, it's definitely
yeah, billionaire
in romance.
Billionaire Werewolf Dinosaur. What yeah. possibly? What yeah. more do you want? I mean, he yeah. probably has a Porsche and
I know.
Teeth.
I'm right.
Oh. All of his teeth.
Very short arms.
And lots of height.
Yeah. Very short arms face. To barely hug you.
Yes, exactly.
True or false?
Uh-huh.
Captivated the Dragons is about a vegetarian biker gang who give up drug dealing for high-grade tofu market. Captivated the Dragons is about a vegetarian biker gang who give up drug marketing for the high-grade tofu market.
I can't believe that that's actually, that is less real to me than Billionaire Werewolf Dinosaurs.
So
false.
You're, nope, I'm sorry. It
what?
Is a real book.
Are you kidding me?
It may not be for sale anymore because so many people said it was terrible, but vegetarian biker gang give up the drug market in exchange
oh
for
my
the high-grade tofu. Barry Hardyman.
I don't know about
I can't believe.
Barry is the queen of our hearts.
I'm so glad I wore this lipstick.
All right. Well, we have to take a break. When we come back, we are going to move on to our favorite segment always, what is making us happy this week. We will be still on our theme of romance. So come right back.
Hi, I'm Erica, and I'm calling from Charlotte. This episode and the following message are made possible by PicMonkey.com, an online photo editor that is super sorry for being a promotional message right now. What they want to be is your favorite photo editor. Whether you're editing photos or creating collages, you'll be having fun and making cool stuff. And now you, yes you, can have a free month of PicMonkey's premium subscription. It's a heaping megaspoon of bonus features, and it costs money for everyone except you. Just go to picmonkey.com/pop.
Welcome back. This brings us to our final segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? I think we should go around and talk about a book that we have not yet talked about that we really love. So I'm going to start with Sarah Wendell. pick any book that you really love that we have not talked about. Don't overthink it. Just think, if somebody says, I don't read romance, I would love to read romance, what do you recommend?
There is a book called, a series by Tessa Dare called Castles Ever After. And the first book is, I believe, Romancing the Duke. The heroine is the daughter of a man who wrote a fairy tale series that captivated everyone in the country at the time. It's a historical, and they have created a fandom. And so she is the star of this fandom, whereas her father was writing stories and not doing things like paying the bills. So she is very, very, very hard pressed for money and a safe place to live. And she inherits a castle, as you do. And she finds that there's already a grumpy, cranky, emotionally uninterested, surly duke already living in the castle saying it's his. And she says, no, it's mine and I'm not leaving. But the way in which fandom plays this wonderful, heartwarming role in the book is so adorable. If you've ever experienced being part of a fandom and you like historicals, you will love this book.
Thank you very much, Sarah Wendell. Petra Mayer, name me a book that you love.
The book that I always give people when I say read romance, I promise you will enjoy it, is The Lion's Daughter by Loretta Chase, because early Loretta Chase is the shiz, and that one has is the one that's set in Albania, and it has all the detail, the interesting historical detail. What, you're making a face.
I love that book.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there you
it's
go.
Good book face.
And Lord of Scoundrels.
Lord of Scoundrels, too, but I think Lion's Daughter doesn't get enough props because everybody loves Lord of Scoundrels.
Right.
So The Lion's Daughter, set in Albania in the 19th century, starring a scrappy little fighter girl who kicks ass and speaks Albanian, and it makes me so happy.
Wonderful. Barry Hardiman, speak
yes.
to me of a book that you like.
I think actually what I'd like to bring up is what I would use if someone had never really read real, like the sort of the real genre
right,
romance.
Sure.
So the entry point for me was brought to me by NPR Books because I was not familiar with Eloisa James. And I think that and I am now very familiar.
I take responsibility for this.
And I think that this is
well
Petra's
done.
Fault. I think I would say the Desperate Duchesses series.
Yeah.
I really love them. The first one may not be my actual favorite one, but she lays the groundwork for the other ones so well.
Chess is sexy because of the series.
Yeah, that's true.
Chess
is
totally. I think the chemistry is great. For
the
me,
Shakespeare
it's
references.
Like exactly. And she is such a great writer. And it was this may be the first real series that I read. So I think I would say if you haven't done this yet, do it.
Yes.
And she's also a lovely person.
Well, thank you very much, Barry Hardiman. I will admit that I'm cheating a little bit by recommending a book that I have recommended, I think, multiple times, possibly in the past, on this show, which is the book Bet Me by Jennifer Crusie. One of my favorites.
Big book, good noise.
Yeah, that is a book that is, it has one of the most kind of hackneyed setups potentially, which is people who meet because the man is approaching the woman as a result of a bet that he has made with a friend, which bets are perhaps the only more hackneyed thing than I need a date for a wedding, so I need you to pretend to be my boyfriend. Often my ex's wedding, so I need you to pretend to be my boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But despite the fact that this book starts off on that note, it actually turns into this extremely interesting meeting between these two people where it makes sense why they don't immediately get together. They don't just fight and fight and fight and fight, and then at the very end they get together. They fight some, and then they kiss a little, and then they fight a little more, and there's kind of a sort of back and forth about what exactly they're going to do. And there are some really silly elements, including, they both have exes kicking around, and it could potentially be really dumb, but it's actually really thoughtful and really sweet, and it's very sexy, and I really love that book. Again, that book's called Bet Me, and it's the one that I always use to say to people, if you want to try a contemporary, try this one, see if you like it. That's my little offering. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C or Petra at Petramatic, PETRAMATIC. You can follow Barry at B Hardiman, HARDYMON. You can follow Sarah at Smart Bitches. You know how that is spelled. And you can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. Jessica, as you can imagine, has had her hands full today with this lineup of folks. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Oh, thank
it was
you for
such
having
a pleasure.
Me.
Thank you.
It was an honor to be here.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll see you back here next week.
Be honest, are you a music nerd or a fledgling music nerd who wishes they knew more about what's out there? The All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music is here to help. All Songs Considered is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Each week, Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best new and upcoming music and lots of songs you'll fall in love with. Find new All Songs episodes every Tuesday at npr.org/podcasts or on the NPR One app.